It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a nonprofit helping families in the Madison area.
For many survivors of domestic abuse, finding affordable housing can be a challenge. And then finding furniture to fill that new space, that can be less of a priority. But as WPR's Gabby Vinnick reports, one nonprofit is providing families in Dane County with sofas, beds, and decor to turn their apartments into homes.
Jaisha?
Yeah.
Okay, she likes blue.
How about these?
Oh, give them those. Okay.
All right.
Oh, what about those pink light lamps?
Yeah.
It's a Saturday morning, and Felicia Denny is on a mission. She needs to find furniture for a family of two sisters. They need items like a couch, a bookshelf, and an end table. We're on the second floor of Denny's house. She and her mom are choosing furniture for a family she's never met. Their work is part of an organization she founded during the pandemic called Felicia's Donation Closet.
What we do is we fully furnish abused women and children's apartments when they move out of homelessness.
Denny and her crew of volunteers help make a family or individual's house or apartment feel like home. To date, they've furnished more than 50 apartments. What started with a potential couch for sale turned into a full-scale operation. She donated her furniture to a mother through a community shelter. And from there, the idea to create a nonprofit took off. Donations rolled in. Demand soared. Denny has a full-time job, but she would spend hours driving and delivering furniture to families on weekends. And for Denny, the mission is personal.
I'm a survivor myself, and I just felt that I needed to do something back, give back to the community. Just from the experiences I went through, had I known that there were so many other resources out there, I probably wouldn't have stayed so long in some of these really horrible relationships.
At a storage unit in Wanakee, Denny is moving furniture and directing volunteers.
Okay, you guys want to grab this dresser? Careful. Hey, you're going to break that. It's a canvas. Come this way.
Denny says many of the women she works with have gone through hardships. Some are homeless. Others have been raped. And she says when people finally get a job or their own apartment and come back to an empty home, it only makes it that much harder to leave the abusive situation.
That's when you always start questioning, did I make the right decision? Should I go back? Because usually the abusers would keep finances for them, and that's how they trap them.
Denise says that's why helping people during what is sometimes their most vulnerable moment is so important.
So we are that missing aspect to make that home a sanctuary for them. That way they know that they are making the right decisions, they are in the right steps, they are heading the right direction, they can just move forward and become, you know, the beautiful women that they are, that they deserve to be.
You guys might want to go the other way so you can turn it, like, come out.
Denny and her team eventually arrive at a Sun Prairie apartment and begin to unload furniture for sisters Jaisha and Jessica Edwards.
All right, it's kind of a tight squeeze.
After their mom died in 2015, the Edwards family bounced around from Chicago to Sun Prairie. Jessica says her family had been on the waiting list for a new apartment for over a year.
There's so many emotions going on right now inside of me. Like, I don't know whether to cry, smile, you know. I'm just blessed because a few years ago today, I would have never thought we would have been here.
And to top it off, their home comes fully furnished. As she looks to the future, Denny says the bigger the donation closet gets, the more families they can help.
I think when it really hits me is when we're there and then we walk in and we're done with everything and then like their whole house is filled of everything, that the moms get emotional, and that's like usually when it gets me. Because then I'm like, oh my God, don't cry. It's going to be good now.
WPR's Gabby Vinnick brought us that story on Felicia's Donation Closet in Dane County. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowland Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook and Instagram. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine difficulties in cultivating native wild rice and this years-long effort underway in Oneida County to bring back rice beds on Spur Lake. You can be part of this discussion about wild rice. Call in with a question or a comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Carly Lapin is regional ecologist for North Central Wisconsin at the Department of Natural Resources Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation. Carly, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. And you're joined by Nathan Podney, who is a hydrologist for the Scoggin Chippewa community, Mole Lake Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Nathan, welcome back.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Nathan, let's start with you. Why is wild rice restoration so important to tribal communities living near Spur Lake?
Yeah, great question. You know, I've worked for the Scoggin Chippewa community for about 8 years now, and their connection to wild rice is tangible. The lake on the reservation, when it's performing, there's a sense of pride and community. And over the years, as we all know, the prevalence of rice across the landscape has decreased. So being able to be a part of this project and opportunity to bring rice back, which was once abundant on Spur Lake, is immeasurable and very important to us in the Scoggin Chippewa community.
Carly, how do you reflect on that cultural significance, that spiritual significance of wild rice for Ojibwe people?
I have really been honored to observe the importance of this resource for the local community. It's been really a great opportunity to be able to partner with Nathan and the Scoggin Chippewa community on this project. I've learned a lot, and the support means a lot to me. And it has been a really great experience.
Well, take us back. In 2019, your working group started the wild rice restoration project. Wild rice plants are starting, apparently, to appear on Spur Lake. Tell us about this timeline. How are you seeking to improve rice growth?
In 2019, the effort began actually as a climate adaptation project. There had been a lot of questions about why rice had been declining on the lake over the years, especially since the late 90s. Spur at one point had been one of the better ricing lakes in the county. And before I undertook a climate adaptation project like that, I wanted to involve local partners because there are a lot of stakeholders who have an interest in this lake and the rice there. And so we formed a Spur Lake working and identified a number of different steps that we could take to better understand the system and what was happening there and potentially see if we couldn't do something to restore the rice.
Walk us through some of those steps. What has that process been like so that you could become closer to the lake and what's happening to these rice beds?
We have been examining the hydraulics of the system, the hydrologic components, and we're able to, with some funding from donors, hire out a hydrologic study of the whole system and get a better understanding of the history of the site, what sort of changes had occurred on the landscape, different infrastructural changes that potentially have resulted in higher water levels over time. That, along with different climate change impacts, have what we think negatively impacted the rice. So there are a lot of different factors. Hydrology is different, and it's linked throughout the landscape. So it's been kind of like putting together the pieces of a puzzle through time. And then in the last couple of years, we've had lower water levels once again through natural cycles of water on the landscape. And using that as a cue, we decided to do some more manual manipulations on the lake to remove some of the perennial vegetation that's been outcompeting the rice. And we seeded rice in October of last year and are monitoring the results right now. We do have, some rice that's growing back in some of our plots.
Some rice that's growing back. Is it at a rate that you think is a comeback? Is it sustainable?
Well, I think that remains to be seen. Typically with ricing or restoring rice in projects like these, you would reseed for 3 years in a row.
Okay.
And monitor the results. So,
Nathan, from your hydrology perspective and the working group studying Spur Lake to find out what's driving this decline, what does the research say?
Yeah, well, we know just across the landscape, we've lost about 50% of our wetlands, either in the state, either from drying out or human manipulation. But we've also installed a lot of culverts and severed connectivity. And we've seen this on a lot of lakes where undersized culverts, which cannot convey the normal amount of flow, will lead to ponding in the lakes. And especially in spring, when wild rice is most susceptible to being ripped up or even potentially drowned, the severance of connection and undersized culverts has shown to be really, really negative for a lot of lakes. And we've seen that, but we were wondering what the factors were for Spur Lake. And when we did this hydraulic study and took elevations at the outlet of Spur Lake and down the stream channel, we didn't see as much of a difference as we thought we'd see. There was really no smoking gun. Yes, under large rain events and large events, which would cause a lot of water flowing out of Spur Lake, we did see a difference in the upstream. So at Spur Lake, higher water levels prevailed. But not to the extent that we thought that it would completely destroy the rice bed the last 2 decades, as Carly said. Hmm. So there was really no smoking gun as far as the downstream culverts, which would have been great because then you just, you know, pull them out, do the construction, replace it, and get the water moving out of the system, and rice will ideally come back. But there's a lot of variables at play, and that's why Carly mentioned climate change. And she also mentioned this period of low water that we're trying to take advantage of. So really, we want to recreate the qualities of Spur Lake from 20 years ago. So we do want to still replace those culverts, and we do want to knock back some of this vegetation. But it's hard to really narrow down what is occurring at Spur Lake.
That is hydrologist Nathan Podney for the Scoggin Chippewa community and regional ecologist Carly Lapin at the DNR's Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation. As we discuss wild rice cultivation, be part of the discussion at any point. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We check in on wild rice restoration efforts underway at Spur Lake in northern Wisconsin and how to make lakes like this one productive for growing wild rice. It's an integral part of the culture of indigenous communities. Call in with a question, your thoughts along the way, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Nathan Podney is here, hydrologist for the Scoggin Chippewa community, and Carly Lapin, ecologist with the DNR's Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation, both working on Spur Lake's wild rice cultivation. Carly, how are people's lives in the watershed and how they live around and along Spur Lake, how does that affect the life and the ability to maintain rice beds on Spur Lake?
That's a good question. Spur Lake is actually a pretty intact system in its own. The lake itself doesn't have any development on it and is surrounded by high quality wetland communities and upland communities. There are a few residents in the area who live nearby, and every time we're out there working, the local neighbors almost always stop and want to know what we're doing. And there's always comments on how much rice there used to be, and people are very positive And happy to hear that we are trying to reinvigorate the rice on the lake.
Can you explain how does wild rice growth support the surrounding environment and life on the lake?
Sure. Rice is an important, ecologically, it's an important plant species. Lots of different wildlife use it as food and cover, especially waterfowl, water birds. It's an annual species that reseeds itself in the fall. The rice grains overwinter on the bottom of the lake, typically in silty sediment, and then will re-sprout in the spring. It is an interesting aquatic species in that it has an underwater, a floating leaf, and an emergent form, all of which occur during the course of the growing season. So typically, the rice will start to sprout right as soon as the ice goes off the lake. And then into June, it'll be floating on the surface of the water, and that's when it's really susceptible to wake or large changes in water levels. And then it begins to emerge from the water to stand up in July. It fruits and pollinates throughout the course of July and August, and then the seed begins to form and can be harvested typically in early September.
Can you explain how it's harvested, how it's collected and gets off the stalk?
So there are some regulations about rice harvest in the state. Typically, it's harvested in the cultural traditional way, by knocking it into canoes.
Okay. Nathan, talk about if you could address the waterways. Twin Lakes Creek connects to Spur Lake. The stream joins the Pelican River, which in turn flows to the Wisconsin River. Can you describe the work being done in waterways to improve rice growth?
Yeah, we touched a little bit about looking at culverts and the hydraulic study, and maybe for this conversation, I'd like to concentrate a little bit more on some of the work being done in the lake. Spur Lake is a little different than a traditional rice water. Usually we want to see an inlet and an outlet. That inlet or that water coming into the lake is great for bringing nutrients into a system, and that allows the lake to perform on an annual basis. Now, we do see wild rice waters that can thrive with springs or in lakes with just currents, but a lot of times those lakes will see larger fluctuations one year to the next just due to the lack of nutrients. So there's some internal nutrient cycling going on in the lake. And if you have a really good year, you're less likely to have a good year that next year. But if you have a source of water coming in, like a stream, then we'll see those lakes perform a bit better. But in Spur Lake right now, what we're trying to do is remove some of that perennial vegetation that can compete and even outcompete rice. Because at some point, Spur Lake must have reached a tipping point. The lake was covered in rice, and now it's covered in floating leaf and emergent vegetation. And we knew from work on other lakes that if we knock back some of those lilies, some of those floating leaf plants, we could give rice a better chance to succeed through germination, through the submerged and emergent stage, and knock back some of that competition. So what we ended up doing is we brought a swamp devil, which is really a large rototiller, into the lake. And we cut up 1-acre plots in three different study areas. And we really wanted to see how the lake would respond without seeding. Because you can imagine seeding takes a lot of time, money, and effort. You have to be on the lake, buy the rice. You have to make sure that rice doesn't dry out, so store it. And then you have to go out into the lake in canoes because this lake doesn't have a boat landing. Spur Lake doesn't have a boat landing. And we have to actually hand spread it. So in those plots, if the rice came back without seeding, we would know that there's a vigorous and robust seed bank. And we could kind of depend on the lake to take care of itself after we remove the vegetation. However, we also wanted to reseed one of those areas that we removed the vegetation to, just in case that seed bank was, in fact, kind of not there. After 20 years of poor rice production, not replenishing its seed bank. And that kind of seems to be the case. It seems like we're going to have to remove vegetation and reseed it to get a response.
Thank you for, you know, really sharing that living experiment that is underway. And so I think what I'm hearing is invasive aquatic plants could be also stifling the wild rice in trying to grow.
Yeah, in some instances, that's definitely the case. Huh. In other instances, and specific to Spur Lake, it's less so invasives, but other aquatic plants that have taken over. We'll see in a lot of systems with stagnant water levels, and this can be caused by undersized culverts too, where you don't get that large fluctuation, which, yes, can be bad for rice, but it also is it mitigates the amount of perennial vegetation. And rice as an annual can bounce back from that. So on Spur Lake, maybe we're seeing too much of stagnant high water levels that have allowed these perennial plants to proliferate.
They need to be flushed out a bit. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Carly, I just want to give you a final word here. What is needed in future months to really keep the rice plants as healthy as possible and keep this work going?
At this point, I think we're just going to continue monitoring. We do plan to seed more rice again at the end of this growing season and next summer as well. But we're planning to monitor to see what happens. At this point, we'd really like to just see what unfolds at Spur Lake so we can get a better understanding of what's happening there and then decide if we want to expand those efforts either within Spur Lake itself or perhaps on other water bodies where we're seeing similar issues with wild rice.
Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you.
Carly Lapin is North Central Wisconsin Regional Ecologist for the Department of Natural Resources Bureau of Natural Heritage Conservation, and Nathan Podney, Hydrologist for the Skagen Chippewa Community Mole Lake Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.